coming straight from the underground.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's the Sports Hub Underground. This is Matt Dolliff. I'm here with Ty Anderson, my co-star, as always, as we are every single week at 98.5, thesportshub.com, wherever you get your podcast. Hello, Ty.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Good. Doing good. Doing good. We put up some numbers last week. We got a little bump in the downloads. I don't know if you've been checking the stats, but the embedded player, there was someone's article on the website. I assume it was yours. Might have been mine.
Yeah,
we tend to get a lot of clicks on the Bruins stuff. There was a lot of plays on the embedded podcast player.
I don't look at stats because it makes you think you're better than you are, or it makes you think you suck. So you don't. Look at your stats. Don't ever do that.
No, don't want to get too big of a head after this. You know, it's a bit of a sugar rush because the embedded players are so inconsistent. You know, it's so hard to get people to. I feel like it's not a thing that people like click on an article and then listen to a podcast inside an article. But I don't know. Apparently, every now and then we get one that works. So
yeah.
It might have worked that we called last week. We just called it a Bruins Hour. That's what I called the podcast. I wonder. I need to poll our listeners about our episode titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I like to call this podcast something like something we said on the episode. I like to be the title of the podcast, and I like it to be, you know, thematically relevant to what we're talking about.
Yeah,
but sometimes I might get a little too obscure.
We could do the Seinfeld thing and just have, like, the nose job, the visa.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too.
You know,
yeah.
The puffy shirt. We can always do that. I don't know.
The butter shave.
Yeah.
We could do something
The butter
like
shave
that.
Is one of the most absurd episodes in the history of the show. It had, like,
that's
got to
be the funniest.
Got really absurd.
Yeah, well, yeah, it got ridiculous after they lost Larry David.
Yeah.
But I feel like with the talent involved, they still could be a really funny show.
He's and like, that episode was proof. I have parsley all over me.
Butter.
Yeah.
Kramer. And then he sees him in the turkey.
Ah. Hey, buddy.
The funniest part is the old people chasing George in the scooters. And they're going like, people are literally like walking down the street and blowing by them because they're going like 1 mile an hour.
Right.
Hilarious.
Loved it.
Good stuff. Seinfeld holds up, I think.
It's all I watch.
It's all you watch.
Well, like if I'm at home just writing, I need background noise because I'm a psychopath, and that is the show that I just put on in the background probably the most. Now it's on Netflix.
That's true, yeah. It's very easy to just throw on. And you could,
yeah.
And Netflix makes, because Netflix just like, next episode, we're going to the next episode. And they just, and then you blow through like 5 episodes without even thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yo, no, I love a big Seinfeld guy. I haven't watched it in a while,
it though. Stinks in this studio.
Stinks? Stinks
it's
of what?
Like B.O.
B.O.? What do you mean?
It ain't me.
I showered before coming in here.
All right.
You proud of me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should shower all the
time. I still think the men's room down there still smells like cigarettes. I know you told me it's a weird chemical mixture that's effing with my brain. I'm still convinced that someone is ripping butts in the bathroom down there.
It tastes like cigarettes.
What?
I don't know, Forrest Gump shit. I don't know.
I'm sorry, Lieutenant Dan. Sorry I ruined your party.
Should
taste like cigarettes.
I don't know what that bathroom smell is. I avoid public restrooms. This is like a weird thing about me, is that I will not use public restrooms unless they are completely empty. It's a weird thing. I've never walked into a bathroom and said, you know what I want to do? I want to share this with somebody. That's never been like my MO.
Yeah.
So I just don't like public restrooms.
What touched that toilet seat? Someone else's ass? All right, I'm in.
Yeah,
let's do this.
Describing
that as a public restroom, though, is a bit of a stretch. It's a nice corporate public restroom.
It's not
a public restroom like you'd waltz into like a Burger King in the middle of Manhattan with bulletproof glass.
Yeah, well, there's something about, I would say that in the public restroom game, the chain that does it the best is probably Target. The Target bathrooms that I've had to use over the years.
Their bathroom game is nice.
It's nice, right? The worst would be Stop and Shop. Now, that's just animals inside of a Stop and Shop bathroom. So someone wrote on the wall at the one in Alston, they wrote, I did your mom's stinky butt. And I was like, well, that's just mean. That's just
Good
mean
Lord.
For so many reasons.
I'm not even sure that's much of a brag. The stinky butt?
It just felt mean. I didn't like it.
One of my favorite podcasts is Tuesdays with Stories with comedians Joe List and Mark Norman. They're both hilarious, but the podcast is hilarious. And they started talking about how the inventor of the toilet, his name was like John Crapper or something like that.
That can't be right.
I think they were exaggerating. I don't know if that's true. I feel like I looked it up one time, but like they got to a point where they said his name was Steve Dirty Butt. I think they said it was the guy's name, and I don't know. It's the juvenile in me comes out when I listen to that podcast. It's hilarious. It's one of the best in terms of just two guys talking for an hour.
Yeah.
I've recommended that to you over and over again.
I know. I have a hard time with podcasts. They don't capture my attention. And then, you know, my ADD brain is like, all right, no time for this. Put on trap music. And then I'm like, all right.
I get it.
Trap music it is.
I get it. But you're okay sitting here and talking, doing your own podcast.
Yeah, because that's different. It's just us having a conversation.
Right, yeah.
I know you. We have a relationship. It's not like two strangers that I have. Yeah. You know what it is?
I try so hard to like make it seem like we're just talking like we do in the office, but there's so many things that we just can't say.
Talk
about, you know?
Jumping into a podcast, it feels like jumping into the middle of a TV show without having watched previous episodes. Mm-hmm. And then like there's inside jokes and there are things that I just don't get. And it feels like it hurts my ability to enjoy it. So that's where I'm at with podcasts. It's about the attention. It's about capturing my attention, but also making me feel like I'm not sitting in with two lifelong best friends for the first time and having no idea what the hell is going on.
We got some best friends listening to us every week, I think. We got some good friends of the program.
Everyone's a friend for me.
Yeah, everyone knows us.
Unless they're not.
Everyone knows us probably a little too well at this point.
Yeah.
Everyone who's been listening to us every week. All right, well, Ty, you made your second appearance in a row, or second week in a row, on Felgram Mass today.
Yeah, what's going on with that, huh?
How was that? Apparently you had just finished committing a burglary with the all-black setup and the black winter cap. How did mm-hmm. that go?
It was good. It was good.
No, what was the total value of the items you burgled from
Believe it or
home?
Not, $26.83. Ooh. Not a great take-home.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Not sure you weighed the benefits against the costs of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go notify the authorities.
It was all silverware, so really not a good job by me.
I'm going to go let the Waltham police know after we're done recording. Just saying.
This is Officer McNamara. I don't know if that's a real officer or not in Waltham.
Oh, I'm sure there's a couple of Officer McNamara's cruising around right now.
Actually, Waltham is one of the only towns that I've ever been pulled over in. I got pulled over in Waltham because I went down the wrong road. It was like late at night. It was raining. This was years ago now. And the cop pulled me over and I rolled down the window.
Was it like wrong way down a one way? Do not enter? Similar, same thing?
I went down a road I wasn't supposed to go down. Like it was like a do not enter, but I didn't see the sign. And I said to the guy, the cop who pulled me over, I rolled down my window, and I was like, "Officer, I'm just going to tell you right now, I have no idea where I'm going. I've never been to Waltham. It was my first time in Waltham. I'm like, I have no idea where I am right now. I was like, I'm just trying to get back home. I was like, can you point me in the direction of where the highway is? And he was like, oh, yeah. He's like, just don't do that again. I was like,
yeah.
I won't, because I don't know where I am, and I promise I won't do it again.
I think that's how you get out of a ticket, is you're just honest with the guy. Just like, nope. Even like if you were speeding, you're just like, nope. Thought I could get away with it.
Right.
It's like, if you're just honest with them like that, they're like, all right, I'll let you off with a warning then.
Yeah. But I was like, I have no idea where I am. I know this is Waltham, but I know nothing else beyond that, dude. So,
most of the time, they don't even want to bother. You know what I mean? Like, the last time I got pulled over was I made an illegal U-turn. And literally, the cop was like, yeah, it's probably just a warning, but I just got to check this out real quick. And he just, like, he let me go within, like, 30 seconds.
You just had to make sure you were a murderer, and he Googled your name one.
Yeah.
Whoa, whoa, what?
Didn't want to make sure there were no outstanding warrants.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of those.
Really?
No, I had one.
Ugh.
I don't even want to get into that.
Yeah, let's not.
It wasn't that big a deal. It's not on my record anymore. All right. So back to your appearance on Felgram Mass. We've had the second week in a row now where we're talking about all these records the Bruins are setting, and you got little Mikey Felger to come out a little bit. You know, Felger admitting he wants the Bruins to lose. You know, he's not going crazy like me saying I don't want him to win the President's Trophy or anything like that. You know, win these games. So, you know, my take has evolved, Ty, because I think I'm in the acceptance stage of them winning the President's Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
I think last week or 2 weeks ago, when I brought up, you know, I was in the denial stage. You know, last week maybe I was in the anger stage. I'm angry that they're winning so much. That's a joke. I want them to win every game.
Mm-hmm.
This week, you know, I'm sort of accepted it. I've accepted the fact that they are going to win the President's Trophy. You know, it's a thing. It's basically in the past now. It's basically happened. So I've moved on. And, you know, like, I don't know what else to say about this team with all the records they're setting. And they might set the record for most points, best record, most wins, and all that stuff. Maybe they're just the best team this year. Maybe they're just the best. You know, like, sometimes
Colorado did it.
Yeah. Well, did Colorado win the President's Trophy and then win the Stanley Cup the same year?
No, but the entire season, you knew they were the best team in hockey. Like
Last year, yeah, and like Florida won the President's Trophy last year, but
it was close. I think it was close. Like, I think it was between them and Colorado. Like, yeah. I want to say it went down in the final week. But no, like, think about this, right? Like, so Colorado was the best team in hockey last year. We all agreed. We watched them play. And we're like, this team is a machine. Like, how do you beat them? And then what happens in the playoffs? They only lose to two different teams in the entire playoffs. They lose to the St. Louis Blues and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm.
Four rounds. They swept the Preds. They swept the Oilers. You know, so like, you look at it that way, and you're like, sometimes the best team just is the best team. I think it's a false equivalency to say that if you have a great regular season, you must have a bad postseason.
No.
I don't agree
that's not
with that.
It's not a great regular season. It's like being the best team.
Right.
Because I don't know why, but those teams, they always seem to, not always, but they often seem to come up short. There hasn't been those two things in 10 years. That's why I'd be a little concerned about it. But it's not so much that I believe in curses. You know, wake up the Bambino, I'll drill him in the ass, as Peter said. It's not that I believe in ghosts or, you know, the supernatural or anything like that. It's that I just feel like there's got to be some kind of correlation there. But I look at the team and, like, my concern isn't necessarily that they're going to win the President's Trophy. It's that I just hope they stay healthy. Stay healthy, rest guys down the stretch. Don't push it too hard at the end of the regular season to get the regular season record. Mm-hmm. You know, I just hope they don't do that.
Yeah, they're not.
I don't think they're going to. Like, they don't strike me as a team that would care about that sort of thing.
Bergeron only cares about winning.
Yeah, and I would hope that, like, Jim Montgomery wouldn't push that, or Cam Neely or Don Sweeney would care about, you know, getting all those regular season records, getting the 63 wins or 138 points or whatever the record is. Like, you know, if they get it, obviously that's great. But, you know, rest your guys down the stretch. Don't empty the bucket in March and April and then have nothing left in the playoffs. That's really all I'm saying. And I feel like there probably have been times where teams are, like, desperate to have that one seed, not necessarily break a record, but that one seed, best record. We got to win this thing. We got to be the number one seed. We got to get home ice. And they put a little too much into that. And then a team comes along and beats them in the playoffs, because home ice isn't necessarily the most important thing. You can win on the road in the playoffs, you know? So I just hope the Bruins, you know, stay healthy and focus on that and focus on being fresh at the start of the playoffs rather than, you know, breaking records or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that will be the focus. And I would disagree with you in the sense that I think home ice matters for this team. It matters because of who they would play. You know, if everything plays out the way it should play out, and let's say it's Boston and Carolina in the third round, Carolina is the second best home team behind you. You know, so, and you saw that last year.
I know you said that series last year, home team won every game.
Right. So,
yeah, I get that. I'm just saying, don't push it so hard to get. But they don't even have to, like, they have home. They're going to have home field. Like,
they could go 500 for the rest of the way and still finish with almost 120 points.
Yes. So, I saw that on Twitter. I think it was Spokes Z, friend of the program.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. They could go 500 the rest of the way and finish with 115 points,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's honestly, like, insane. I don't even, it's like, I almost do want them to win the president, because if they don't, Ty, if they don't have the best record at the end of the regular season, that means something probably went wrong. You know, a couple of major injuries, or they just start really slumping, the goaltenders turn into pumpkins. Like, something went wrong if they don't have the best record in the league at this point, right?
Yeah, oh, 100%. And I think that, you know, I think you never want to say a team is bulletproof, but regular season-wise, it's hard for me to find a fatal flaw that's going to suddenly emerge for them. And that's assuming health,
like,
right?
It would have to be someone who's playing well to just start not playing well, like Allmark. Have to be like Allmark sucking out of nowhere.
He'd have to go back to being, or not back, but he'd have to go to being a sub-900 goaltender, which he hasn't been for about, you know, 17 months now, 18 months. He had a bad training camp. Since then, he's been good, right? So you look at it from that way, and it's like, okay, well, even if he does... Let's say worst case scenario, he does go in the tank a little bit. Well, you have Jeremy Swayman right now, who's winning games and has a 940 in his last, you know, nine outings. So it's like, you know, that's what makes you we've talked about this before. That's what separates you from a New York, from a Tampa, even, you know, to a certain degree. You know, the drop off from Vasilevsky to Elliott is noticeable, right?
Mm-hmm.
The drop off from Ullmark to Swayman, it's getting bridged closer. You know, with the way that Swayman's turning on his game. I mean, he's approaching, I want to say, a 920 now on the year, save percentage wise. Think about
good.
It. Four weeks ago, he was at 890. You know, like so his game is steady rising. So he's bridging the gap between himself and Ullmark. So that's all you want to see, I think, you know, if you're the Bruins. I think, though, you know, like going back to what we were saying, like, you know, what I disagree with that people say about the Bruins is like, oh, you can't have a good regular season. Like, no, they've had in-season challenges. They had to play without Marchand and McAvoy. They had to play when Swayman was struggling. Like,
they were answering every challenge.
Right.
I think you said it on Felger Matt. It's like, you know, when they're answering every question, like, what are we supposed to say?
Yeah.
And Felger said, just make something up. I think that's what Felger said, something like that.
They've lost 9 games, right? They're 9-0 after losses. Like, they don't have losing streaks. They are almost at the All-Star break, and they still don't have a losing streak. That is insane.
No, they haven't lost, does that mean consecutive games or more than 2 games in a row?
They have not lost 2 games in a row at any point this year.
Well, in regulation, right? Didn't they have a regulation loss and then an overtime loss?
They are 9-0 after losses this year.
Good Lord.
Right. They don't let things fester, and I think that is the mark of an elite team. That's the mark of a championship medal kind of locker room. And, you know, we've asked about that. You know, why is that the way it is? And I think Montgomery's already getting them in postseason mindset, because he was asked about it and he said, we don't lose 2 in a row because if you lose 2 in a row in the playoffs, you're in trouble. And it's like they're already finding that.
That
like mentality of like you can't lose 2 in a row.
I
it doesn't
love that.
Happen.
I mean, that's pretty true. You go down 2-0, you go down 3-1, you go up 3-2, then lose in game 7.
Yeah.
Two losses in a row is bad news.
It's bad news.
That time of year.
And, you know, it's funny because when I would talk to players off the record, you know, I'd say, how are you guys able to flip the switch and not lose consecutive games? And at the time, it was kind of not secret, but it was, you know, someone told me, we have a saying in here, you don't lose 2 in a row here. And then it comes out, you know, later, like, yeah, that's the motto. We don't lose 2 in a row. It's like, that's always been their MO, right? Mm-hmm. It's just they're executing it now at a level that which we've never seen. So I think that's why I push back on the idea there's no challenges, there's no this. Like, no. They are finding in-season challenges. For an elite team, they are not resting on what they've done so far. They want to find that next level and tap into it. And there are guys that, you know, people bring up the playoffs already to the players. And I found it fascinating. People were asking about the playoffs. And there were players who were going, we're not there yet. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's like, you mean you're not? You got 80 points. You're gonna make it. Like they have
satisfying.
This mindset that I think is really interesting.
Well, it's true. They only have 80 points. They could go 0-40 the rest of the way. You never know.
Matt, they've left 14 points on the table the entire year. That's crazy to me.
Hey,
14 points.
14.
That's it.
It's 14 points they should have had.
It's nuts. Imagine having a season and you get basically. I'm trying to do quick math in my head, but like
they're 38-5-4, so yeah, they're not far off from 47-0,
right?
Or even like, you know, 42-5, if you want to.
Yeah,
plus 4 games in overtime.
It's nuts.
It's insane.
It shouldn't happen.
There's also, I mean, there's games that have gone the other way, that like, could have gone the other way, but didn't. I think because of Linus Ullmark, and you know, I'll talk more about that later in the pod. I think we got to take a quick break here. I'm not done recapping your Felger Maz appearance, but we're going to do that. We're going to talk more hockey. Just a quick break here. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Welcome back, Ty. I'm still going to recap your Felger and Maz appearance here. One of the more interesting discussions you had was about the trade deadline and what you think they should get, what you think they could get, what's available, what's not available. I'm with Michael that we need they need to get a defenseman, and I would love for them to get more than just a depth guy. I would love to see him get a guy that you could qualify as like a 3 or 4. But this is sort of like an emerging take, philosophical thing I have. Like, is it really about having a true top four in all four spots, or is it really more about a pairing? Is the guy that drives the pairing, in this case, Charlie McAvoy drives one pairing, Hampus Lindholm drives the other pairing on the Bruins, ideally, most of the time. And you just need a complimentary guy with them. A guy, yeah, you want a decent player, a guy that's more than just a depth guy that would spend some time on the ninth floor. But do they, I don't know that they really need to get like that impact defenseman out of these guys, but I think they could use another, you know, complimentary piece for that could, Felger said, replacing Grizzlick, which I know it's a sort of a tough thing to bring up right now because Grizzlick's playing really well, but we've seen what can happen to him in the playoffs, and teams know how to play him. We've seen that happen. I do think they could stand to get a bigger guy, a guy who's sturdy, who can play that kind of game in his own end. I think they could still use just maybe even just one more guy like that, whether it's left side, right side, whatever. And I know Felger kind of put you on the spot. I was listening in, maybe thinking you had examples because maybe it was in the email, the famous Felger email chain, but he kind of put you on the spot there. And you said, you know, those guys aren't really available. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but how about I throw some names at you?
Of course.
All right. I'm going to give you a name. This guy I think would be a legit top four guy. I Googled him. There are, you know, people are speculating, talking like, could he be traded? Is this going to happen? Because he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Matt Dumba, Minnesota Wild.
It makes sense, but they're going to be a buyer. I don't think they'd be a seller. And
okay.
The Minnesota cap situation is so messy because they had the buyouts of Parise and Suter that it's tough for them to...
So don't they want to move money then?
No. Well.
But not to move one of their top defenders.
They're not going to move one of their top guys because it's going to be hard for them to... What I'm trying to say is it's going to be hard for them to bring in high-end talent, I think, because of their cap issues, right? So... Mm-hmm. They're not going to strip away until they absolutely have to. So, you know, they're trying to squeeze the lemon 10 times over right now, I think, in my opinion, to extend their window. I'd be very surprised to see them move on from Dumba. It'd be great, but I think they're more buyer than seller. And I think so. You're talking about a hockey trade. And I don't know if this team really wants to make one of those right now because they like their combinations so well, so much. So
the Bruins like their combination?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'd be very surprised to see him on the move. It obviously could happen. I mean, they may look at it like we got to maximize value while we can. We can't afford him. I mean, that's a realistic possibility. But, you know, when you have the roster they have, when you have Marc-Andre Fleury in net, like, you're about trying to win now. Right, and so I think that's kind of how I'd look at it from a Minnesota standpoint.
Aren't they getting ahead of themselves, thinking win now? Or are they better than I think they are?
Could they
go on a cup run this year?
I think the Central Division is wide open, so I think that's probably a factor.
So
for
they could
them.
Be a conference final team, is what you're saying?
Well, who's the best team in the Central? Winnipeg, probably. Winnipeg, Dallas. You know,
Dallas.
If you're Minnesota, you look at that and you say we can hang with them if we get quality goaltending and we stay true to our identity, we could win that series. I think that's how they look at it. So, you know, they're kind of like, they're one of those teams that, you know, back when remember in 2015, 16, 17, the Bruins were not a great team, but they had that feeling of our core pieces are good enough where if we get in, we could make some noise. I think Minnesota is kind of that team right now.
Okay. All right. I mean, I would love it if the Bruins made a trade like that, but I just feel like I was just looking at guys that are going to be, they're potential rentals, you know what I mean? More than like a guy that's signed for 8 years, like Colton Parayko, that they were bringing up on the show. All right, how about Dmitry Kulikov?
Pass. No, I don't see it. I've never been overly impressed with his game. I don't know if he makes quick enough decisions. Not a guy that I would make a move for. There is a defenseman with a similar name that would intrigue me, though. I'm curious if he's on your list.
Well, so we'll get to the end of the list, and I have a guy with a similar name here. Let's see if it happens. The next one, though, now this man is old. I'm talking about old man Jack Johnson.
No. Stinks. Not good.
He's not good anymore?
Not good.
I thought you brought him up as an idea. Maybe it was someone else.
Ooh, definitely wasn't me.
Maybe it was Jaffe. I'm blaming Jaffe.
I am not a Jack Johnson guy. Banana pancakes. I was gonna say you don't
like
player.
Okay, all right. You don't like your acoustic guitar music.
When I worked at PacSun back when I was in high school, like 2007, 2008, we would play Jack Johnson, and there's nothing that makes you want to run into a knife more than Jack Johnson on Saturday morning while you're folding a denim wall. It is like, kill me now, please. So,
and that was a daily base. I'm sure it was the same playlist every day.
Basically, yeah. And I just don't understand the Jack Johnson vibe. If you like it, you like it. Whatever. Not for me, though.
Yeah, I liked it for a couple of years when I was like in college. But then eventually I was just like, I don't get it either. Like,
what
is the fascination with these?
Were you wearing shark tooth necklaces and pretending to know how to surf?
Not dressing like him, but just the music where it's like, people act like he's like a guitarist. he taps like three chords.
He's like Adam Sandler if Adam Sandler just surfed and didn't do comedy.
He's like if guitar shabby. Yeah, and if guitars only had two strings. That's how he sounds. Yeah, I liked it for a couple years. But okay, so you're out on Jack Johnson defenseman. All right. How about Tyler Myers?
No.
Another no.
Another no for me.
Big right shot guy. I guess he'd be redundant with Brandon Carlo. I don't know.
Yeah, that Vancouver team, that defense is pretty stinky. I don't want anything to do with that. You know, we talked about a Vancouver guy last week with Luke Shen. If you're giving me the option, Tyler Myers or Luke Shen, I'm probably taking Luke Shen just because I think it's less cost prohibitive. I also think that Luke Shen fits what they want to do more than Tyler Myers. You would hate Tyler Myers. You wouldn't like
him. He's not physical enough.
He's not like he's a big dude, but he doesn't play like it. Like you would go insane if you had to watch him.
All right, I'll give you a guy that plays like it, and this is the guy with the similar name. Plays for the Calgary Flames. His name is Nikita Zadorov.
Yeah, I mean, how are you using him? Because I think if you're using him in your top four, I think that's a recipe for disaster. So this is what I'm talking about.
I feel like
they
need some kind of Carlo insurance, though.
This is what I'm talking about.
Carlo goes down again. Who's stepping up?
Zaboral.
Exactly.
Strawman.
Exact. Get someone more viable than that. Right?
Yeah, I know, but you're who is that guy? Like this.
I'm trying to come up with names.
This is what I'm talking about, though. Like so. All right. So like, let's say you want to do that, right? Like, this is a really sort of, you have some high-end guys available with Jacob Chychrun, with Erik Karlsson, and then the list just kind of goes, you know, you go from having one number one defenseman to like number five and six defenseman.
Well, maybe that's sort of my point, though, that I was saying before, is that like you're either like a top guy that drives your pairing or you're just a complimentary guy.
Right.
It's kind of hard to find the guy that's in the middle there that's like a viable option that would like markedly improve your team when you're trying to go for a Stanley Cup. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I am talking about like, you know, complimentary guys, third pairing guys, whatever. But if you're saying Zadorov wouldn't work, you say next to Lindholm or, you know, something like that. I feel you. I listen to you. I value your opinions. You watch more hockey than me.
With what's being asked of this team, I don't know if stylistically he's a fit. Like the making plays. Let me put it this way.
Yeah, but like, would he be a stylistic fit for what they're going to need in the playoffs? They're going to need to be sturdier in their own end.
I don't see them reinventing the wheel in the playoffs. Like, it's worked so well that I think they'll trust their guys to make the right judgment calls. Let me just say this.
Reinvent the wheel, but like...
If your playoff defense, Matt, has Derek Forbert, Brandon Carlo, and Nikita Zadorov, you are not doing what this team wants to accomplish. Like, that's how I look at that. It's not quick enough to make to maximize what they've done so well.
And I guess having Lindholm is something that, you know, I guess having Lindholm, well, they had him last year.
But he was like not upright. You know what I mean?
It's basically like the same defense, though, as last year, right?
Yeah. Well, but Lindholm has
I'm not
a full
sure how I feel about that.
Lindholm has a full season. He looks way better than he looked last year. He also had a concussion last year, knocked him out for, what, three games? So,
all right. You know, I'll give you that. I'll give you that Lindholm this year has a chance to be a lot better than Lindholm last year in the playoffs. But is that enough of a defensive improvement?
I thought the Lindholm you got last year was still pretty tentative. I think this one really feels himself, really feels his game.
Well, I mean, offensively.
Yeah.
He's been dangling lately.
But I feel like he's he would take the safe play 9 times out of 10 last year. And this year, you know, he's steady.
And it was Cassidy, so I guess that's a difference.
And I feel like he's really coming to his own this year. So I think that it's the same defense, but I think its key pieces are playing the best hockey of their lives. I would put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, if Lindholm plays the best hockey of his career and he's like clearing out, he's keeping teams away from the front of the net, like that could make a huge difference. I'll give you that. I don't know. I'm just not sure how I feel about going into the same exact core as they had last 3 years, really. All right, I got one more name. This is actually interesting. Before I give you the one last name, well, I don't know how interesting it is. I'm asking you how interesting this is, that Jamie Langenbrunner, who is their director of scouting, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his official title. Don't have it in front, but he was at the Flames game the other night.
Assistant GM, assistant and player GM. Development like coordinator.
Okay, he's not
like
the director. Okay, he's higher up than that.
Yeah.
Okay. He was at the Flames game the other night. Is there something to read into that? I know the Bruins play the Flames next month, but would they send Jamie Langenbrunner out there just to scout them for a game, or do you think he's scouting players for a possible trade?
Who are they playing?
Oh, I didn't see who
Columbus?
They were playing. Might have been Columbus. I don't know.
Gavrikov, 6'3", left-shot defenseman. He's a -5 on the Columbus Blue Jackets, who have the league's second-worst goal differential, -63.
All right, so you're giving me a name. So this is a guy you would like. So tell me more about this guy.
I would like him.
I don't know this guy. Tell me about it.
He put up about 30 points last year, I want to say, 33 points.
In his own end, though, how was he?
Decent. Passable. Like, that's a guy that would make sense to me. And, you know, the Blue Jackets are they had high expectations entering the year. Those have since kind of gone out the window, and now they're saying, well, let's get Connor Bedard for our core that has Cole Sillinger, Johnny Gaudreau, Patrick Laine. You know what I mean? Like they are embracing the tank. So
Bedard's that good, huh? He's like McDavid, Crosby, level of prospect?
I think so. And it's interesting because he's smaller, but he's just a rocket, dude. Like, he's just, he moves so well.
Well, I watched the clips of him, and
he reminds me of Crosby.
The way he sees the ice and anticipates.
Yeah. He reminds me of Crosby.
That's where you're special. A lot of guys are fast and can shoot, but if you can see the game and think the game faster than everybody else, like that gives you an upper hand.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, he's good from in tight areas. I think he knows what he does well, and he excels at those things. But, you know, that is a battered Columbus defense, not a deep defense, right? So if they were to move Gavrikov from it, okay, now they're even worse, right? And now they are truly in tank mode, upping their chances, you know, for Connor Bedard. So he would be a good fit, in my opinion. You know, it gives you some more size, some more range. Skating game is good. So with Langenbrunner being in Calgary, he's probably going to get a look at Calgary and at Columbus. I think, though, if you're looking at those two rosters, I think Columbus is where his attention would probably be for the most part, and namely with a guy like Gavrikov.
Okay, I think the reason why I read into it, because whoever tweeted was like, he's at the Flames. It must have been a Flames guy who tweeted it.
Mm-hmm.
There was the aforementioned Zadorov. What about Noah Hanifin? Do you think keeping him?
No, I think they like him enough to hang on to him. Calgary's in a weird spot, right, where you know, the pieces are there. It just hasn't come together the way it should, right? I'd be curious who else would be in the block for them. I
got one more. Chris Tanev.
It'd be nice. Does he fit what you want to do, though, in terms of role, time on ice, price, all of that? I need to know his contract situation. Is he a pending UFA, or is he in years?
At the most, he has one more year. I forget.
That
if
makes
he's
it hard for them, I think.
Like,
it all depends who it is, but I think that if they are going to acquire a guy with term, they want it to be like a slam dunk, like a Chychrun, for example. Like, they want something like that versus, you know, a decent player who has term, because they already have enough of those guys with Forbert, with Grizzlick, with Mike Riley in the minors right now. Like, they have a lot of like decent enough guys who have multiple years left. So I think that's an issue.
And another interesting thing, well, I guess one more interesting thing you said on Felger, that you would trade Fabian Lysell for Bo Horvat.
Yeah,
like if, before this year, before the deadline.
If you're getting the Hampus Lindholm kind of treatment where you acquire him and extend him immediately, that's when I would do that. I'm not mortgaging the future.
And I feel like they would do that because they don't have any centers coming up.
Right, right. And it's much easier to convert a center to a wing than a wing to a center.
Yeah, you can't do the other way around.
So I look at it from that standpoint of, well, I look at it like, okay, Bo Horvat's impact on the Bruins over the next 8 years would be greater than Fabian Lysell's impact on the Bruins as the second line right wing for the next 8 years. And that's factoring in Jake DeBrusque right now, too. DeBrusque has been a fit on that top six on the right side. He has one more year left on his contract. I think he's going to stay here if they can come to an agreement. So if you have Pastrnak and you have DeBrusque, where is Lysell playing? Your third line? Okay, well, I can leverage him into getting Bo Horvat, who's going to be a first or second line center for my team for the next 8 years. That's just good asset management, right?
Yeah. Like, well, I say do it. I mean, I know Lysell and Mason Laura look like they're going to be legit players, but like just sell out to win the cup this year. Well, worry about your prospects and your draft picks, whatever, after you win one more cup. You know, for Berge and Krejci and those and Marshy and those guys.
Yeah, you know what's funny?
Go all in.
You know what's funny, Matt, is that
you've been saying that for like 3 years, by the way.
I think that, you know, you talk about the value of a rookie quarterback contract. I think the value of a young, cost-controlled defenseman is on par with that. Like, if you can find a top four defenseman who is under team control on an entry-level deal or his first pro contract making, you know, $2.5 million.
Well, that's the rarest. The defensemen usually take a long time to, you know, come
yes
into their
and
own.
Yes no. Yeah, like, I would agree with you 5 years ago. Now, these kids are coming up and they're thrown right in the fire and they're like, well, okay, Adam Fox is really good, it turns out. You know what I mean? Like,
but is he ready to go win a Stanley Cup? He can score.
Yeah, well, okay, like, how are you leveraging it, though? That's what I would ask you. Like, if you put a Lowry with a Lindholm or with a McAvoy, do you now have a supercharged, you know, this is where the NHL is going kind of pairing? Because, like, if you do, yeah, it's worth its weight in gold.
Okay,
you
so
know?
You're saying you're okay dangling Lassell if you can get a Bo Horvat type of player back, but you'd rather protect Lowry from a trade?
Yes, because
even if they don't, if they come up short next year, maybe this year, maybe next year, Lowry is ready to come up and get in the mix.
Well, let's think about it this way, though. Okay, so they have McAvoy and Carlo as their foundational pieces. Whether you like it or not, they're their foundational pieces on the right side. The left side is Hampus Lindholm. And they went on a multi-year quest to try to get that next left shot D.
Yep, they got him.
You know, the Zaboral, Lozon, Vakanainen, you know, like, I think that, I said it on the radio with Felger, but, you know, the best way to make up for not having high-end centers is having a stacked defense. And I think that, you know, Lowry is listed at 6'4". He looks bigger and more filled out every time I see him. I think where the game is trending, these 6'4" guys who can make plays with the puck, I think you want to hang on to them. I don't know if he's going to be like a legit top pairing, even top four guy, but I like enough of what I've seen that I want to see him in the pro game before I sell him, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like there's something there that I want to explore.
But you don't mean the NHL. You just want to see how he does in, like, Providence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, could he be the McAvoy type who plays 2 weeks in Providence and comes up? I don't know. You know, like, that
might... McAvoy, like, there was a thought that he could be good, but then he played a couple years at BU, and it's like, his stock went way up. So
oh,
you
yeah.
think there's
especially
a chance
with,
of that with Lowry.
When he was on Team USA at the World Juniors, McAvoy, he was awesome, and you were like, whoa, they got something here, right? Mm. And I think they won gold that year. But yeah, like, he just... Lowry intrigues me. Just, you know, like... This year at you know, he plays monster minutes because it's not a great Ohio State team, like, in terms of, like, high end talent. So he plays a ton of minutes every game.
Don't tell Albert Breer.
He's got 49 points in 57 NCAA games, playing in the Big Ten. Like, you know, I want to see that at the pro level before I rush to sell him, unless I'm getting, you know, I'm equating it. Okay, like, let me put it this way.
Well, if you can get Chitrin.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, because that's in the now, right? And I know what he has, and I know he can do this. It's the same concept with Lysel and Horvat, where if you're turning Lysel into an extended Horvat, I'm okay with that because I know what you have with Bo Horvat. It's the same concept on the back end. So I think that's how you have to look at it if you're the Bruins, but I don't know. The hardest thing for me, Matt, is the calculus of making a deadline deal when they have no money. That's the hardest thing for me. Mm-hmm. Like, looking at all the different maneuvers they would have to make, that is the real problem, I think.
What do you think they want to do? Do you have any idea of that?
Couple of depth moves. I think they'll be in on the big fish, but I don't think they're going to have the stomach to pay the prices for the big fish, because I think they should.
They should have the stomach for it, is what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Winning the deadline doesn't mean winning the cup, though. You know, like, and so I think that...
Well, that goes back to, like, don't trade Taylor Hall. Don't gut your NHL roster.
Yeah.
Don't make a drastic move like that.
I think internally, I think there's some worry that a team like Carolina would swoop in on guys they'd want, or a team like Tampa, who's never been afraid to make the big move, would swoop in. But... And for the Bruins, that is like, you don't make moves just to match what your opponents are doing. I agree. But...
And don't outbid them.
Kyle Palmieri torched your ass in 2021. And you're like, yeah. Would have been nice to have him. Blake Coleman was a pain in your ass when he's on the Lightning. And you were in on him,
well,
too.
Well, that was sort of a depth move, though, right? Can't they get their Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow, Pat Maroon type trades?
Yeah, they should. I just...
On defense?
If you're asking me to come up with a wish list right now... Left shot center.
Give it to me now, Ty. Right now.
Left shot center and scour the D market. See at 250 if anyone is like, oh my God, we got to move this guy. We're going to get nothing for him. You know, like I think that's where I'm at with it. I think a left shot center is a key, a sneaky big key for this team because of obviously the injury with Tomáš Nosek. Kapanen looks good, but... He's played four NHL games. You really can't bank on that.
If we see him in on the playoff roster, that's something bad has happened.
Yeah, and there's a lot of left shot forwards available that are bottom sixers, or could be great bottom sixers for your roster.
You've mentioned him before, Barbashev.
Jonathan Toews, Barbashev, Nick Bonino, Ryan O'Reilly, Vladimir Tarasenko could be a great third line right wing. Jeez. I know he's not a center, but like that, you know, like that's something you could experiment with, like. There, Noel Achari is a guy that I wouldn't be against bringing back. He's a right shot, I know, but again, like that's a guy I'd like to see. I think he's a right shot. Double check that. But yeah, like there
Let's
are
have
guys,
our producer check that out.
There are bottom sixers that I think are worth the investment if you're the Bruins, and they shouldn't break the bank to acquire those players.
All right, well, yeah, I mean, I hope they do something. It's not like don't do something just to do something, but I feel like there are those little areas of the roster that they could stand to improve, and I think you said it too with Felger. It's like Don always makes a move. Don, say what you want about Don Sweeney, he does make moves, you know, at the trade deadline. So they'll do something. We'll just see how big or small it is. All right, we got to move on, Ty. We are pressed for time. We have about 20 minutes left, so we're going to do the big three. All right, quick break here, and then we'll come back and do the big three.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're back. Ty, it's time for the big three. And I thought, you know, in honor of the Academy Award nominations coming out the other day, or was it yesterday, we're going to go back to our favorite memories from the movie theater. We're going to do our big three favorite movie theater experiences. This could be, you know, any point in life. Could be last week. Could be when we were a little boy. But that's where we're going to go. Do you want me to start, Ty?
Yeah.
Right, the magic of cinema. I know Ty's not a big Academy Awards guy, but you know, Top Gun, Maverick, Avatar, those you know, action movies and CGI movies, they're getting some big best picture love lately. So maybe it's going to be more of it's going to look more like Ty is running the Academy in the coming years. You know, Black Panther got nominated for best picture.
Oh, did it?
It's a different era.
It shouldn't win, but that's cool.
It's a different era. There's a lot of you know, hoity toity Oscar bait type movies that aren't actually good. That, like, they just look and feel good because they have good actors and good sets and costumes and all that. But are they actually, you know, a great movie? Not really. Not really.
So this is movies that we experienced in the theater.
Movies that we saw in the theater and, like, you know, we got good memories of it.
Okay.
All right. I'll start, so I'll let you, you know, think about it. I didn't really, you know, I don't have a definitive order here. There's no, like, clear number one or top three or whatever, but my first pick, I'll give you Borat.
Oh, yeah.
I saw Borat in the theaters, and seeing a comedy in the theaters is probably an underrated experience because you don't think of a comedy as a popcorn movie, but when it's a packed theater and everybody's laughing their ass off, it's hard to beat that in terms of a movie-going experience. And Borat came out at the perfect time for I was, you know, 20 years old, I think, when it came out. Perfect type of humor, and, like, it had the right type of, like, movie theater comedy, I guess. Like, the way it would just, like, cut to something, like, it would have funny edits and things like that. And, you know, everyone died, and I still remember sitting in that theater laughing my ass off at Borat. So I'm going to give you that one.
It's a good pick. I saw that with my father, and it was unbelievable. We saw it at the Revere Showcase Cinemas, rest in peace, now an Amazon Fulfillment Center, I'm pretty sure.
That's disgusting.
It's not ideal. So that's a good pick. I like that one.
We saw Bruno a couple years later. It wasn't the same.
Bruno was not
Bruno was a little too much.
Yeah, yeah. Although I do love the Straight Dave's man-slamming Max out. It's unbelievable. That is such a funny thing. The Borat 2, not that good.
No,
kind of
yeah.
stunk.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
But that's, I mean, it's to be expected, right? That character could not go out in public. Like, without...
Right.
Like,
that's the trouble with all those things. Like, Tom Green, the Tom Green show was great mm-hmm. when it first came out, but then it got to a point where, like, he was too popular. It's like, now he can't go fool people.
Right. That's like, even the Eric Andre show, I feel like, is almost too mainstream now for him to be able to pull off what he would do in public. Because, like, he's...
Except with, like, old people, you know?
Well, but the Eric Andre show, like, has crossed over into, like, the meme stratosphere, where it's like, let me in! You know, like, when he wants... Like, and then the RNC and the DNC when he went there, and also, you know, when he shoots Hannibal, like, people recognize Eric Andre now, like, if he's going to do that. So
yeah, and annoyingly, I think people that do that now are just, like, political trolls. They're not even funny. They're not talented. You know, they just, like, go to a protest and just start yelling at people and put their camera in people's faces.
I wouldn't
require
consider,
zero talent.
I wouldn't consider Eric Andre that, though.
No, like, no, he's not. No, yeah. Eric Andre is not that. He's a comedian.
Yeah.
He's a real comic. I'm saying, like, that's like people go to a protest and, like, start ripping signs out of people's hands and, like,
oh, yeah. Well,
grilling them about, like, this and that, you know, policy or whatever. It's like, grow up.
Yeah.
I hate those people. Wherever they land.
You care about those people, and I gotta tell you, I don't even know they exist. I'm just like, yeah, whatever. Like,
I'm not even sure I care.
Mind.
I'm not even sure I care. I'm just annoyed by it. They get shoved down my throat.
Yeah. I would say that your For You page is making you a white nationalist, Matt.
I don't know what's going on here. I blame Elon. Every time I go on, like, I had to mute that Libs of TikTok account because I would log into Twitter, and that's the first thing I see every time because, like, someone else follows them. It's like, I've seen all this page has to offer. I don't need to be seeing this every time I open the app, Elon.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
I got rid of that one, and then there's another one pops up. It's like a game of whack-a-mole.
All right. First pick for me would be, again, this is not ordered necessarily, but Jurassic Park had a re-release in 2013 in IMAX, and it was the best because when Jurassic Park came out in theaters, I was one year old. I was a one-year-old. I don't know how the right way of saying that. Anyways, so I never got to see that in theaters. So I got to see it in IMAX in 2013 as part of the 20-year anniversary, and it was awesome. I was like... I had seen the movie 1,000 times at that point, but seeing it in the IMAX theater was, like, mind-blowing to me. I had such a good time.
And I'm sure the movie itself was remastered and looked and sounded
epic.
Yeah,
the sound was awesome. Yeah, so...
Which IMAX? You see it in, like, the Reading?
Reading IMAX,
furniture?
Which is the only one you should go to. There's one in Natick or Framingham. That one's okay, but it's not the one in Reading. The one in Reading is, like, next level.
The one at Jordan's Furniture is the real deal. Yeah,
yeah so... that was an awesome experience. I love Jurassic Park, as you know. Mm-hmm. So seeing that on the big screen, something I never thought I would get to do, to be able to do it in that fashion, fantastic. Probably the best theater experience of my life. I'm not going to lie.
Cool. No, I had Jurassic Park on my list. I knew if I didn't make it one of my first two picks, you probably were going to take it. I didn't want to be an a-hole and steal it from you because it's not, you know, but it's like, if you asked me what's the first movie I ever saw in a theater, it was that one. I was like 6 years old whenever
yeah.
it came out. My dad took me and my brother and like, yeah, blew my mind.
That's
blew
crazy.
My mind.
I'd be like, I love dinos, but I'd probably be afraid if I was six and I saw that in theaters.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy how the effects hold up in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's so hard for like a CGI movie to hold up over time.
Yeah.
So I'd put Jurassic Park in that sort of category, except I think the CGI raptors don't look great, I think, now, if you watch it now.
What's your favorite CGI raptor, and why is it the raptor in the third movie who on the airplane goes, Alan?
Wait, what? I don't remember that
one. Did you
ever
see the third Jurassic Park?
I remember it stinking.
Yeah, it was not good. But there's a nightmare scene that Alan has on the plane.
And a raptor talks to him?
And he envisions like a raptor on a human's body, and it goes, Alan, and he wakes up. And it's absurd, but it's amazing at the same time.
That sounds utterly unacceptable.
Right. Yeah. It is. It was. It was
no,
a
I remember
crime
that
against
one.
Nature.
I remember that one coming off like a cheap B movie.
It was not a good.
We're
in a giant
Spielberg
bird cage. Yeah, it was not good. Not a good movie.
I didn't love the Jurassic World movies either.
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Lost World. I'm like,
I liked the
Lost World.
No, I liked the Lost World. No, I'm saying the new ones with Chris Pratt.
They got worse as they went along. The first one was good.
First one was fine.
Second one sucked. I haven't even watched the third one because I was like, I'm good.
Yeah,
I'll watch
second
it
one, I think that's exactly what happened with me. The second one I didn't love, and then so I was like, all right, I'm done.
It's
I'm
on good. Peacock, I think, if you got nothing to do and you want to watch it.
I mean, they're apparently still huge because you go to a Target, you go to the walk by the toy aisles. There's Jurassic Park toys everywhere.
Oh, yeah, but those are dinos. Kids love dinos.
Kids just love dinosaurs, don't they?
What was your favorite dinosaur growing up?
Oh, my favorite type of dinosaur?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a T-Rex guy.
T-Rex is good. If you had extended beyond that, though, Triceratops. Cool looking dino. That and the one that has the big thing on its tail that can just swing it around. Mess you up real good.
Or the Stegosaurus? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name. Might be something different than that. But
I can't believe Steven Spielberg got away with killing that poor Triceratops. How did the animal rights activists not go after him for that one?
Dude, I think I've worn it around you. You ever seen the hat that I have, the Jurassic Park hat that I have? It's the
probably.
It's the staff member hat. It's sick.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you have worn it. Perhaps in this very building.
Probably.
You've worn it in one of the Sports Hub buildings for sure.
Yeah.
But
that's the hat
that
the scientist who's like helping that sick Triceratops, that's the hat he's wearing. I got that off Etsy, and it was like a lot of money, but it was worth it.
Yeah, no, I don't know if you remember, like, someone posted a photo of, I think someone posted originally as, like, a troll, but, like, I can't believe Spielberg would do this to an innocent dinosaur, and, like, people, they were, like, a legitimate, like, amount of people got outraged about it, and I was like, the internet, you know, it's just making us that dumb now, was, like, 10 years ago. I don't even want to think what people's brains are like now.
What do you got for a second pick?
Oh, God, we've only done one pick each?
I know, that's what I'm saying, we gotta
man.
Go.
All right. My second pick, I'll stick with IMAX. I saw the movie Dunkirk in IMAX, and I know you're probably, you don't watch war movies, I imagine.
I wanted to see that one, but I had no one to go with, so I didn't see it.
Could have gone with me.
Oh, well, you didn't text me.
I should have. Yeah.
Howard.
Well, that might have actually been before we started working together. I forget what year it was.
I think that's right.
I think we might not have even known each other at that point.
Probably not.
Except like through Twitter or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is a war movie I think you would like because it's not too long. It's a pulse pounding thriller type of war movie. It's one of those movies that zips along, well paced, and it was made for IMAX. That's why it stood out to me so much. Seeing an IMAX is that Christopher Nolan literally filmed a bunch of the movie with an IMAX camera. And so like you go to the IMAX theater in Jordan's Furniture, it takes up the entire screen and just the sound made you feel like you were there. And like, that's a movie that like, if they re-release it in IMAX, I'm going to go see it. Like that was an incredible experience. I need to see more movies that are made for IMAX because of Dunkirk. I'm sure that anyone else who listens to this podcast who saw Dunkirk in the IMAX theater knows what I'm talking about. So that I will make that my number two pick.
It's a good one. I respect it.
And you should watch. You should watch the movie anyway. I think you'd like it.
I'm trying to like steer away from IMAX, but it's such a great movie experience. So for my number two, I will go with Star Wars: The Force Awakens, because I was able to see the Star Wars re-releases in 1997, 98 when those came out, and they put them back in theaters with my dad. That was awesome. But to be able to see Han, Leia, Luke, Chewbacca, to be able to see them all on the big screen after basically almost an entire life of seeing them on TV or right. You know, DVD was really cool for me. And that movie definitely like captures you with nostalgia and a lot of the same plot points that A New Hope had. And I'm well aware of that. I don't give a shit. I had such a good time watching it that I was like, this is awesome. I love this.
The
and it's such a bummer
because
the series just went down after that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they could never find the magic of The Force Awakens in the follow-up sequels. But I loved Force Awakens. It was like, you know, like the prequels, you know, were out in the early 2000s. They didn't have the same magic that these ones had, right? Because they brought in the original cast. They brought back some characters that you recognized, that you loved. So it was just a great energy around the theater. I went opening night. Like, it was a lot of fun. Like, that was a great theater experience for me, just from, like, the atmosphere and the energy standpoint, I would say.
That's a great pick. I agree with you on, you know, the movie itself. Way better than any of the Lucas prequels. And I don't care either that it's like that it's the same plot as A New Hope. Like, A New Hope isn't the most original plot. If you just take away like all the zany names and stuff, it's a basic like hero plot.
Right.
That wasn't. It's not like George Lucas invented that sort of story. You could like name like a lot of movies that have that like similar story. It's just different like character names and settings and all that stuff. That's what Star Wars is. But Star Wars is just, you know, it's a special thing and it's a unique thing with all the characters and stuff. And yeah, and J.J. Abrams should have directed that whole trilogy. Force Awakens is the only one that, you know, the last one, right, that was just him trying to, like, cobble together, like, trying to salvage it. And so I think Force Awakens is the only one that actually, like, feels like a legit, like, Star Wars movie, one that stacks up with the rest of them. And so, yeah, I don't think I saw it in IMAX, so I'm a little jealous of you on that one.
Mm.
But, yeah, the prequels suck because there's too much CGI and the acting's bad. Actually, everything's bad about those movies, in my opinion. But yeah, the practical effects and, you know, the pacing and like all that stuff is, it's all good. And I don't know what it is about Harrison Ford, but even like 100 years old, for some reason, he still has that presence.
Yeah, like I'm going to go see Indiana Jones again.
Yep.
Like
Indiana Jones,
like, whatever.
He's on this,
I love it.
He's on this Yellowstone prequel show.
Yeah.
That I watched and I was like, I love Harrison Ford. I don't know what it is about him. He's that dude. All right.
What's that movie he did where he gets accused of killing his wife and it's a guy with one hand?
The Fugitive.
Great movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie. That's a great one.
With Tommy Lee Jones.
Yep. That's a classic. That is a classic.
That's like a stupidly high-rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes, too, where I saw it and I was like, whoa, it's like a 94 or something like that, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, no, that's the movie that they point to as like a perfectly like scripted, paced. It's like a perfect movie.
Right. Right.
You know.
With a name like that, you wouldn't think that, though. You know what I mean? You'd think it'd be like campy and kind of goofy, but it's great.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, it's a little goofy, I think, going back.
It wasn't me. It was a one-armed man.
Yeah.
I finally got that.
And like, they made a Leslie Nielsen parody movie, Wrongfully Accused, that was basically like a parody of The Fugitive.
Yeah.
That alone should tell you that, you know, The Fugitive is a little silly.
That's like, I didn't like that movie, Mafia. It was like that.
Oh, I love Mafia.
That's such a you movie to love.
I looked that movie up recently because I had to think, like, I had to watch the scene where they make fun of. But you haven't seen The Godfather, right? So I don't know how you enjoy Mafia if you haven't seen The Godfather.
I just remember being silly.
But they
as
make
hell.
Fun of the, they make fun of the scene where he kills the two guys in the restaurant, which is a direct parody of The Godfather. And the reason it's funny is you have to see The Godfather. It's like for some reason he shoots these guys directly in the head, but they take like a second or two to actually die. So it's like, so when he shoots the guy in Mafia, when he shoots the guy in the head, he shoots him and goes, bam. And then I looked in the distance and saw an ocean. It was far as the eyes could see. And then he dies. I don't know. It's hard to explain. He had to be there. The Mafia. Good parody movie. If you like those spoof movies, go watch that one. All right. Time for my third pick. Oh, man. We're really pressed for time here. This is a really, little bit of a recency bias in this pick, but I'll give you 1917. This is another war movie. And stylistically, you know, it might be a little overrated in terms of, like, does it really make it a great movie? But it's filmed in a way where the whole movie is one take. You know what I mean? It's like you're following this guy around for the whole 2 hours. But it's not really. Like, he uses filmmaking tricks, sort of, to, like, make it... But it's, like, seamless. Does right. that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, like, that part is really exciting to me. But, like, just, you know, the sound and the visuals and all that are much better on the big screen. But I think what got me about that movie is that, like, at the very end, there's a scene that they show it in the trailer, but then when you see it in the context of the movie... chills on the back of my spine. And I think our friend Bob Sosi, friend of the program, talked to me about it before. It was a completely different experience seeing it in the theater than it was, you know, than it would have been watching at home. So, you know, I'll give you that. I don't know. I guess you are interested potentially in watching war movies. I would recommend that one to you as well.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. Another one I just missed, like, when it came out. My number three, I'm going back to the IMAX because this one blew my mind when I saw it live.
Is that a triple IMAX from you?
Nope.
Triple IMAX.
I saw Star Wars in multiple theaters, so I can't.
I'll allow it. I had one IMAX, but IMAX is better than a regular theater. It just is.
Well, you're talking about experiences.
Yeah. It is a better experience. So
So for me, it's Doctor Strange, the first one, because
ooh.
Holy shit, does this movie melt your brain in IMAX. It's like the visuals, all the effects.
I did not see it in IMAX.
It was insane. Like,
but thinking back, like even that first scene, you know how they have that like opening scene that like before even the credits?
Yes.
That must have been mind-blowing.
So I saw it with Doc, and we went... on just a sleepy Tuesday night, and there was no one in the theater. It was like us and like two other people, like way far away. And it was both times I just went, "Oh my god!" because it was just getting like insane. Like they were like just like opening worlds up, and I was like, "I can't believe what I'm watching right now."
Yeah.
So that'd be my number three pick. What do we got for honorable mentions?
All right, another IMAX, Infinity War. I saw multiple times. Yeah. I saw it in non IMAX and in IMAX, but like the scene where Thor arrives at that battle, and is it Wakanda?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, well, that was an epic moment. It was even better in IMAX, and like, that was another good experience. I had Jurassic Park on my list as an old one. No Country for Old Men. Have you ever seen that one?
I have not.
Oh man,
he's too scary for me.
No, put that on your list. Great, great, great movie. We've talked about it recently. I forget where it came up, but that was a funny. That was an interesting theater experience because there's no music. And it's like a very quiet movie, and the sound design is something that like a film nerd like me would be into. But like it was interesting watching it with like the whole theater in total silence and everything all tense and all that. So that was an interesting movie to see it there. I'll give you a horror movie, 28 Days Later.
Oh, terrifying!
You've seen that?
I saw it on TV, not in theaters though.
For some reason, I don't know if they had the volume turned up or whatever. There were a couple of loud-ass jump scares that, like, I was literally jumping out of my seat, and everyone in the theater was like, oh, my God, this movie is slaying me right now. So that, like, horror movies, like, that's the one that stuck out to me as far as ones that I saw in the theater.
It's a good one. For me, Rocky Balboa, not a great movie, but I got to watch it with my stepfather, who is a huge Rocky fan, and it was just, like, it's fun, the idea of watching a fight on a movie theater, like, you know what I mean? Like a boxing match on a movie theater. I enjoyed that.
I'm getting sentimental over there.
Cloverfield, because I spent an hour and a half, 2 hours wanting to see the monster. And it was all of our friends. I think we were in high school. And we, you know, you're in the movie theater, but you're like moving your head, being like, dude, where is the monster? You know what I mean? Like, and that was just an interesting kind of experience.
Because it's a shaky camera and it's hard to see stuff, right?
Yeah. Step Brothers, the hardest I've ever laughed in a theater still to this day is Step Brothers.
That's a good one.
Unbelievable movie. And then the other one, Dark Knight. 2008 Dark Knight. We talked about it before. 2008, unbelievable summer for movies between Dark Knight, Step Brothers, Pineapple Express, the perfect summer of movies. I will go to my grave saying that. But Step Brothers and The Dark Knight, I saw those movies combined, I think, 6 times in theaters. I just loved everything about them. So
yeah,
my favorite experiences.
I definitely saw Dark Knight in theaters. I just don't remember the actual theater experience being anything.
Somerville Theater for me with my dad. And then I saw it in Burlington AMC with my friends. I saw it at the IMAX in Reading with my coworkers. Loved it. Perfect movie. Perfect comic movie.
I got one more. Lord of the Rings. I saw all of those in theaters.
Yeah, I think I saw one of them in theaters.
And so,
I love
yeah.
them, though.
Awe-inspiring. I think those movies hold up because of the practical effects, the relative, not too much CGI.
One of the best video games ever, Lord of the Rings, Two Towers for PS2.
Oh, dude, I have a friend. I'm going to mention this to my friend. Like, we rented that game. We like rented it from Blockbuster Video and then played it from like until like 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And we beat it. It's one of those, like, video games based on movies usually aren't that good. It's an interesting dichotomy. Like, a movie based on a video game usually sucks, and a video game based on a movie usually sucks as well.
Yeah.
But that was a fun one, because I liked Lord of the Rings, and it was like, you know, it's fine. It takes an hour to beat. Okay, fine. It's not the deepest game ever, but it was fun.
There are some levels that are hard as hell in that game. Like, I remember, I mean, I was like 11 or 12 when I was playing it, so that might be a factor. The worst video game ever is not based on a movie, but based on a TV show. Sopranos video game is one of the worst video games ever made ever. It's so bad, dude.
I'm surprised I never tried it.
Oh, it's so bad. Don't do it. It's awful.
Why?
It's just horrible. It's not a good game.
But like the story's bad, like the controls suck.
The story's bad, the voice acting is terrible. It has the real guys from the show, but like it's just preposterous. It's just like this pure silliness of a game.
All right, we're getting kicked out, Ty. It's almost time for the off-air. Did you say you're going to be on the off-air show with Felger, too?
I am.
Our coworker is acting very inappropriately.
Yeah, Calvin.
I will not stand for this behavior.
I cannot condone your buffoonery.
All right. We got to think of the dances that we do in the glass while Felger's talking. Felger.
That's right.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. This is the Sports of Underground podcast. You can get us at iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We can send you an RSS feed if you need that. But you can always get us every week at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app. Always plenty of Bruins content for me and Ty, articles, podcasts, things like that. So, you know, go consume us. That's your project for the week. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.